Welcome back to Stand-Up Comedy Secrets for Beginners. I'm Ron Temple, and I'm here again with leading stand-up comedy expert Steve Roy. All right, Steve. We've covered a lot of material so far. All of it's been great. But here's a subject that I've always wanted to know a little bit more about, and I've seen you handle it so well that I think this is going to be a fun day. But let's talk about hecklers.
Oh, hecklers. Well, in the world of stand-up comedy, I guess you would have to say that hecklers are an occupational hazard. But what people don't know, especially new comedians don't know, is heckling doesn't happen as often as you would think it does. Doesn't happen very often at all, depending upon a couple of things. If a comedian has an act that generates laughs, big laughs and frequent laughs, they're going to experience a lot less heckling than someone who can't generate the laughs, can't do what they need to do, or they have self-inflicted issues, which we'll talk about as we go on. But it just doesn't happen as often as you think. But the other thing to realize that heckling can happen in any public speaking environment. You know, it doesn't matter if it's stand-up comedy. It doesn't matter if someone's giving a speech. I mean, the president has gotten heckled. You know, I'm
quite often, actually.
Politicians get up and give speeches and they get heckled. I mean, so heckling is something that's going to happen. One of the things that I would totally recommend that new comedians do is not focus on a heckler or whether you're going to have a heckler, but focus on developing and delivering the tightest possible act that you can.
When you say not to focus on hecklers, that's got to be part of the fear. And, you know, last week we talked about stage fright and the things that enters into getting on stage, you know, just getting up there and performing. But I've been there. We've seen it on TV. We've seen it on comics where hecklers become part of the act almost. I mean, it is some really rude individuals will get up and create problems for the comedian. So, but you're saying that doesn't happen that often, huh?
It doesn't happen as often as you would think that it happens. It just doesn't. Audiences, by and large, are pretty good. And if they're there for a comedy show and you've got a tight act that works, you don't have much heckling involved. And the reason I say that is it's a very simple concept, if that's what you want to call it. If people are laughing out loud, they're not heckling. It's just that simple.
Oh, but that makes sense. In other words, if they're comic's so tight, then that's, we think that professional stand-up comedians are just commanding this, they're just making everybody laugh, and they're not getting heckled because people know that they're really good at what they do. But really what it is, they're not getting heckled because they got a really tight act. It's really funny.
Well, just keep in mind, for the new comedian, you know, the prospect of a heckler, even if you don't think about it when you get on stage, can be quite unnerving. I know it was unnerving for me when I first started. I didn't experience it that much. You know, I had a pretty tight act. I could get the laughs, but when it did happen, it took me aback. I didn't know how to respond. I didn't know, you know, how to engage with these people. And this is one of the reasons why I have a complete chapter of this on heckling in my online course. Suffice it to say that if you don't have stage experience and experience dealing with hecklers, like I said, it can rattle you. Because you'll lose your place. Keep in mind, the new comedian is up there. This is unfamiliar territory to them. Even if they're as prepared as they can be, they're trying to deliver the best possible, I'd like to think that they're trying to deliver the best possible act that they can. And then somebody interrupts, and man, that can just throw you completely off. You can forget where you're at. And I know this has happened to you in the teaching environment, where someone will ask a question or interrupt and say something, and whatever train of thought you were on, it was like, oh man, where was I going with that?
And that's usually when it does happen, is when I've got stuff I'm trying to put out in a lecture format. I'm trying to get some type of material out that maybe I just rehearsed or I wasn't quite as up to par. And students pick up on that rather quickly. And so all of a sudden you start getting these questions. You know, in our world, there are no stupid questions. But there are sure some tough ones sometimes. And it's not even that. It's the one guy that wants to be heard over you. And that's the student heckler. They just want to let everybody know they're just as almost as smart as the professor. So they're going to open up their face.
You'll have that. And so you'll have audience members that think they're vastly smarter than the comedian. And like I said, you know, that's always going to be there. That's always going to happen. Heckling, though, doesn't always happen. And we'll get to a part in this, but heckling, what a comedian perceives as heckling might not be actual heckling at all. And we'll get to that. But, I'm just going to tell you right now that the vast majority of heckling that occurs, and I would be so bold as to say 90 to 95% of the heckling that any comedian experiences is self-inflicted.
Ouch.
Oh, I'm just telling you. Like I said, if you've got an audience that's paying attention and you've got them in your grasp and you're just delivering the last boom, boom, boom to the point where they can hardly breathe, you're just not going to get heckling. But where problems come into play is when the comedian causes the problems themselves. Now, I'm going to give you a scenario and I want you to respond to this. Have you ever been talking with an individual or a group of people and you made a comment using your sense of humor and it didn't come across as funny to the other person or people? As a matter of fact, it kind of either ticked them off or offended them.
Yeah.
Okay. Did they laugh?
No. No, actually, they got a little tight.
Yeah.
You know, and then it's real hard to get the laugh.
Well, you're not getting any laughs after that. But I'm just saying that, you know, we kind of learn as we go through life that there are certain things that we can comment on using our sense of humor. There are certain things that we can expand upon using our sense of humor. And it's going to be, it's going to be acceptable. And it's going to get the laughs we want. We also learn from these bad experiences of what not to do. Does that make sense? Well, you know, you might think it in your head, but a better part of you goes, you know what? I'm not going to say what I just thought.
Let's walk past this one.
Well, I'm not going to even touch this because I really like my car. You know, I don't want to be buried in a shallow grave in somebody's backyard. You understand what I'm talking about, right?
Right, absolutely.
But there's this weird thing that happens in stand-up comedy where a comedian will get up on stage and it's like they have this invisible shield that protects them and they can just say anything that they want. Well, I will be the first to tell you that comedians have the widest berth on anything that they can talk about, provided that they don't offend, tick off, disgust, or otherwise turn off an audience. Because when they do that, they're now stepping into grounds where that audience may want to respond back to these offensive comments. And that's called heckling.
Okay. And that's the worst form of heckling. This isn't somebody trying to be funny now. This is somebody that actually wants to be heard. Is that?
Yeah. Well, they want to be heard over you because what you just said really ticked them off. You know, I'm just telling you, an offended audience doesn't laugh. And if the comedian goes out there either, you know, knowingly or unknowingly to offend that audience, they're going to get what they get. You know, people sitting out in those butts in the seats are no different than the people we were talking about before in casual conversation that you've offended. You know, and this has happened to everybody. I've offended people with my comments. You've offended people. Everybody has offended someone, and hopefully you learn from that. But if you step out in the public arena and you offend somebody, they're going to react, and it can be severe. Make no mistake. So that's one aspect. Another aspect is if the comedian's not funny. If the comedian's not funny, they're not generating the laughs, and it's just dead space, basically. Well, guess what can happen?
Oh, somebody out in the audience will fill in that dead space.
Oh, let me tell you in a heartbeat. They will go, hey, man, tell a joke. You know, I mean, they're just, they can't stand it anymore. So that's a part of it. Or the comedian is really not prepared. And so they try to riff. And what they're trying to do is really duplicate what they're able to do with their friends and family. You know, hey, where are you from? Where do you work? Blah, 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 blah. And you got the same problem. If that's not funny, then people aren't going to participate. They're not going to participate how you wanted them to, you know. Say, hey, where are you from? They'll go, what difference does it make? Why don't you do an act that's funny?
And I've actually seen very, you know, I've been in the audience and seen hecklers that, you know, they almost come prepared to heckle. They're looking for a reason to make noise. But I've also seen those that absolutely all they want to do is be entertained. They bought the ticket. They got the 2-drink minimum going, and they want to be entertained. And they're not, and their 2-drink minimum, their cost, better come out with some laughs. And that's what they come up. They're not heckling. They just say, you need to be funny. Tell a joke.
Well, here, I'll paint another picture for you. Let's say you walked into a hardware store and you walk up to the counter where the customer service person is. You say, hey, I'd like to buy a shovel. Where are those at? And they look at you and go, hey, that's a stupid hairdo that you have. Where did you get that shirt from? The Salvation Army? You look like a doofus. I can't. Now let me ask you this. How long would you stay in that store?
Yeah, I'd find the shovel.
You'd find the shovel yourself and come back. Well, I'm just saying that, you know, when a comedian steps on stage, and no one ever presents this from the angle that I'm telling you, but when a comedian steps on stage, they're dealing with their customers. That's their customers. That's their fan base. That's potential fan base. That's who they are there to entertain. It will be those audiences that will make a comedian famous. It'll also be those audiences that'll turn on you if you don't give them what they want. Now, interesting side note. There's a movie that folks can get their hands on called Heckler. And it's specifically about hecklers in stand-up comedy. And there's all these comedians on there. And I can only watch about 30 minutes of it. And then I had to turn it off. You know why?
Wasn't funny.
And no, it wasn't about being funny. These comedians were talking about hecklers. But here was the deal. No comedian on anything that I watched had any part of what caused the heckling. Do you understand what I'm saying? They were held harmless. It was all about these screwed up audiences.
Oh, so there was, in other words, the comedian had a good show, good act, everything was going well, and these are just interrupted.
No. Oh. If you take a look at some of the comedians who are on there, I can tell you that they delivered material that wasn't acceptable by an audience. See, what I'm telling you is there was no responsibility on their part. And don't get me wrong, that can happen, especially when refreshing adult beverages are involved.
That's true.
Okay? But I'm just saying that no one ever took any responsibility for the potential hecklers or the hecklers that they had experienced. Not one bit. And I find that fascinating because of what I told you before. Most heckling is self-inflicted. It's something that the comedian did. Now, are there exceptions to that? Of course there are. But by and large, if you were at the shows where these heckling events took place, you would see for yourself that somehow the comedian crossed the line to the point that someone felt compelled to yell out.
You brought up a good point, though. Some of that adult beverage, alcohol, definitely plays a part in public where there's somebody that's visibly intoxicated. They seem to, you know, they're not responsible for their own actions because their brain has been shut down, you know, by the alcohol content.
Right? Well, yeah, I can just tell you right now, I performed at shows where there were people who were beyond toasted. I mean, just crawling around on their lips, kind of toasted. I mean, these people didn't know up from down or what have you. And, you know, sometimes that happens. Not all the time. It's gotten better over the years because of, you know, bartenders and bars can be held responsible if they overserve someone that they know is not being responsible, if that makes sense.
Yeah, that one was difficult, but we're starting to understand it as more bartenders are held responsible. Yeah, well,
I'm just saying, you know, I, like I said, I didn't really deal a whole lot with hecklers. When I did deal with them, I will tell you that there was usually alcohol involved. I'd say most of the time there was alcohol involved. And sometimes these people couldn't even form a complete sentence, which played to my advantage, of course.
Right.
But, you know, the way I dealt with hecklers when I first started is the first thing I tried to do was have pre-done heckler lines that I had memorized and ready to go just in the event of a heckling. Well, the problem with that was I couldn't ever remember what they were, and they were pretty good ones. I'm just telling you, like, I had one that said, you know, and this is something that I produced for myself. I said, you know, look, buddy, I'm just up here working. I don't go to your house in the middle of the night and yell through your bedroom window while you're trying to get through your 3-minute performance. So, just stuff like that. But I can never be Johnny on the spot with that kind of thing. So what ultimately ended up happening with me is my act was down so pat that I could walk in and out of my act at will. It didn't matter if I had to deal with a heckler for 2 minutes or 20 minutes. Didn't matter. I could just walk out of my act and here's another thing too that made it good. I didn't have to quote unquote come out of character. They got the same person as was delivering the act when I have to deal with a heckler, if that makes sense. The only difference is I'm ticked as the person who's not doing the act because they're not letting me do my act.
Yeah, step into that because that, you know, that may be, it actually caused you to become upset. I mean, it really did. You did get upset with
that. No, severely upset. I mean, the audience didn't know that. I mean, and it takes, this is where stage experience kicks in, and you know that you got to keep your cool. And here's the reason why. And we had talked about this before the show. If you whack somebody too hard right from the beginning, you can turn that entire audience against you. So you've got to be somewhat escalating in how you deal with a heckler. Yeah, I mean, because if you go too fast and you turn that audience against you, again, here we are, where if that audience thinks that you're picking on somebody excessively or you're being just overly rude to them, no matter what they said, oh, dude, that whole audience can turn against you. And here's a big secret that everybody needs to know. When it comes to hecklers, or anything else that's similar to that or related, you always want the audience on your side.
In other words, you want them focused on the heckler as you focus on the heckler. You don't want them focusing on you.
Exactly. I don't want to focus on me beating up the heckler.
Right.
So, you know.
And you know, you bring up a point that I tell a story often when I'm traveling, when I'm doing guest lecturing, and no matter what town I'm in, I can use this story, and it's a story actually about somebody that's intoxicated in a grocery store. And every time I tell this story, I tell it as if it happened to me. You know, I was over here at the Walmart, or I was over here at Target, and I would tell this story, and at the end of it, you know, the punchline was so severe that it would just, I didn't get laughs, I got booze, you know, oh my God. And it was purposeful. I mean, that was the reason. It was a very shocking kind of story but everywhere I went, no matter what town I was in, would always go, oh, that happens here, I can see that happening here, and they believe. And then I would tell them, you know, that's just a joke. It didn't really happen, it's a joke, you know, and I'd always explain it's a joke, and then I'd get laughs. But I can remember one time where a young lady, after telling the story, goes, it's not funny. I go, well, I mean, it's a joke. I mean, it was fictitious. It never happened. And she goes, I don't care if it never happened. It's not funny.
Well,
she was still upset at me for even the thought of this possibly happening.
So, you made such an impact on this gal. She couldn't get past the fact that it was just a story.
Yeah, yeah.
She
hated me. I mean, truly just loathed me for even having something like that in my in my little bag of tricks. You know?
Well, you know, and the same thing happens in stand-up comedy. Keep this in mind. A comedian can get on stage and stand in front of an audience for an hour and not tell them one piece of truth. I mean, nothing that's exactly true. It can be dreamed up. It can be completely phony. But just like what you described, if it touches that audience the wrong way, wah, wah, now you're on your own, dude. Yeah. So you always want the audience on your side, because what you can do is, if it gets too severe and the audience likes you and they're enjoying your show and this other person's just being a butthead, dude, you can rally that whole audience against that one or two hecklers, and man, they'll get up and leave.
That's powerful.
Oh, it's extremely powerful. But you're not going to get that response from the audience if they're ticked too.
Then you get to leave.
Well, it's just, I'll give you some of my experience with hecklers, and not just me personally, but other things that I've observed. I opened a deaf comedy jam show. And for folks that might not know what that is, it's usually black performers, you know, catering to the black market in stand-up comedy. And so they tapped me to open the show, and I was like, oh, man, you know, what do I do? And I went, you know, I'm just going to do what I do. And so I went out there, did my 15 minutes, nailed it. The audience was applauding and laughing, and, you know, I said, thanks. The second comedian came on. He was a black guy, and dude, it was less than 10 minutes, and he was booed off the stage.
Because he followed you.
Because he was so bad.
I'm kidding.
He was booed off the stage. I was shocked. I just couldn't, I couldn't even believe it, but he was really bad. But man, they booed him off the stage. So that's probably the most extreme form of heckling that I have ever seen. I remember that I did the Tailhook convention. You remember the Tailhook people?
Hell do I.
Yeah, that whole mess. Well, 2 years after that whole investigation went down and blah, 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 I was asked to perform at their convention. And let me tell you what, I knew in advance that this was going to be bad, because I saw how the room was laid out. I saw how heavily the people were drinking and loudly talking. And let me tell you what, and I actually brought an opening act for this. And I told the guy before I went up, I said, because I was scheduled for 15 minutes, and then my opening act was 10 minutes. And I told the guy that hired us, I said, I'm going to tell you right now, if this crowd doesn't straighten up, I'm gone. I'm out here. And he said, okay, I understand. So the opening act went out, and people just talked and walked across wherever, and it was just, he didn't get, I don't think he got any laughs, maybe a few from a few of the people that were actually paying attention. Then he introduced me, and I got up and I did 10 minutes, dude, and people were just yelling over me and talking so loudly and all that kind of stuff. And a guy actually walked up to me and said, and he grabbed the microphone out of my hand and said, we don't want to hear this stuff. We want to hear about naval aviation, blah, blah, blah. And I, so I pulled the mic towards me and I went, okay, so you go ahead and just tell them. So and I handed the mic to him and walked off. Well, I was for that particular scenario, I was ending that particular act, my 10 minutes of hell gig, with a street joke. A good street joke that I knew would get big laughs all the time. And he grabbed the mic before I got to the punchline. And here's what was amazing. There was no less than 20 people that came up to me after that episode and went, what's the end of the joke?
They were listening.
There were some people that were listening, yeah. But, oh man, that was terrible.
And one of our other shows, we talked about the room setup and how that is really important to understand. When you step in front of an audience, that audience has to be at least prepared for you in that respect, as far as where they're sitting, you know, in proximity to the stage and the distractions out of
sure.
the way. And so this was one of those hell kind of events.
Oh, I mean, it was a total hell gig. Yeah, and here's the amazing thing. Of all the what would be considered corporate type gigs that I ever did, this was the only one that I could ever recall being heckled. The only one. Usually they are quite subdued because bosses and bosses' bosses and the head boss are in the room watching everything, and so people are kind of on their best behavior. They don't want to cross the line and that kind of stuff. So when it comes to corporate stuff, corporate entertainment, man, that's the only heckling event that I ever did that I can recall.
Well, we were both in the Navy at the time when that happened. And that was a big event in the Navy. That was brought sexual harassment to the forefront in the Navy because of their convention, the Telehook convention, that kind of went a little bit overboard, whole lot overboard, to the point that as a trainer in the Navy, I was actually tasked with giving sexual harassment lectures. I mean, to big audiences. I mean, I had to go in
and
actually tell them what they can and cannot do. And you talking about a great act, by the way, that was probably the most fun I ever had in the Navy was, and I was pulled out of my own job just because I had training experience and I was still pretty good at it, to give that these series of really tough stuff. But it was, and let me tell you, the hardest thing to do with a sexual harassment lecture is not become harassing, sexually harassing.
Oh, I was that trainer too for the Naval Hospital.
Right, you got tasked with that also. And everybody, it was almost a stand down in the Navy on how bad it was. And then you're telling me 2 years, here's what I'm hearing. So this is history. 2 years after that, this convention is still out of control.
Oh, it was totally out of control. I mean, it was, but you know what? It's none of my business. I still got paid.
Yeah.
So what can I say? And I got to quit early. So
there we go. You know, paid for half of what you did. Okay. And I wouldn't say that, it's just that it surprises me because evidently my lectures were not effective.
Well, you were given the wrong lectures. It should have been the alcohol consumption lectures. not the sexual harassment. I didn't see any of that there. It was all just dumbassery.
And we do know that, what was the old saying, is play hard.
Yeah, work hard, play hard.
Yeah, there's a lot of that in the Navy. And I don't think that changed a heck of a lot. But we're smarter now because they throw you out, really.
Yeah. There were several gigs. Like I said, there wasn't very many. That's why I can kind of remember some of these. I had a gig at the coach house in San Juan Capistrano. And I brought my kids to that, my three kids, because they were one of those few places that had a cabaret license, so minors could come in if they were accompanied by adults, which normally you don't have that in the comedy clubs.
This is one of the first time your children got to see your act.
Oh, yeah, I mean, the full-blown thing, and I was really excited about it because at the coach house in San Juan Capistrano, they have an upstairs green room for the entertainers. Part of that leads to a balcony right in the back of the club that is just fantastic. It's the best seats in the house. You know what I mean? Right there off the green rooms. So it was awesome. So I had my kids sitting up there, and I don't know how old they were. They were between 12 and 16 at the time, I think. And I got on stage after some great folks, but I had saw that they were having problems with these couple of tables, the performers before me. And, dude, when they did comedy shows there, everybody was either a high-level feature act or a headliner. So it didn't matter what spot you were in, but I just happened to be the headliner that night. And, dude, I was 10 minutes into my show, and a table started in on me. And I mean, I was killing this room, and a table started in on me. So I stopped and started with them, and then over to the left, another table started on me. And I just went back and forth, and it was over 20 minutes. I had to deal with these people before they actually got up and walked out. And I just kept escalating the situation, escalating stuff, pulling the audience on my side, and got the whole audience to just get them out of there for me, basically. And it really got me because it meant that was 20 minutes I didn't get to do. of my act, and I wanted my kids to see me perform, you know. But they pretty much dug that I was able to just whack these people at will. That's all they talked about the whole time home.
That was Dad at his best.
Yeah. I was like, wow, you just tore those people up. And I'm like, well, I didn't want to. We don't care. We love it. So it was that was pretty interesting. That's the longest time I ever had to deal with hecklers. Usually I could shut them down.
I don't want to be the Debbie Downer right now, but really you were saying, if we go back to what you were saying at the beginning of this, is that you brought that on yourself. But there are circumstances, and I think that's one of them. I've seen that, where there are folks that come into a comedy show for the sole purpose of being hurt.
Well, just keep in mind, too, is 99% of the time, those people are overserved.
Yeah.
So.
And that's exactly that's what the point, that sometimes, you know, I know your material was tight. I know that you were funny, but they decided that they were going to interject themselves into your show or your performance, no matter what.
Yeah, there was nothing that I could have done. It wasn't because I wasn't getting the laughs. And even when I was dealing with them, I was still getting 4 to 6 laughs per minute. They didn't even know that I wasn't doing my act. That's the thing. If you're able to jump in and out of your act like that to deal with issues like this, people don't even know. I mean,
I honestly have seen hecklers, I mean, individuals that handled hecklers so well that I thought it was part of their act. In other words, they play somebody, like Saturday Night Live does. They put somebody, they make a audience member out there to ask stupid questions, right? So they can answer stupid questions. So I actually, there are comedians that handle hecklers so well that you think it's part of their act. I have seen you work a few. I've never seen more than a few seconds of that, though, with you, because usually they know it's not worth it.
No. Usually I could just shut them down with just, you know, they'll yell out something, you know, and I go, hey, what's your name? And then there's almost always a pause, and I go, check your driver's license. It's on your driver's license. And then I'll just wait. Just wait. I'm looking at them, you know. I'm just waiting. And then usually that's enough. Just something like that. Just, they don't want everybody else looking at them. You know, and that's exactly what happens when you start in on somebody. Everybody's want to see who's the idiot that's getting whacked.
Who's the one that doesn't know his name, has to look it up on his driver's license? Or it's terrible. Okay.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's just some of the things that I used to do. And you know, it's funny. I told you how I tried to write heckler lines and could never think of them. But once I had dealt with enough hecklers over time, I was doing the same kinds of things over and over again. So I ended up doing what I started out to do, but it just happened naturally instead of, you know, trying to write something pre-done. And that just doesn't happen.
And we've had a couple of really good shows on exactly that. Sometimes it has to come out of you naturally. And the timing, we haven't talked directly about comedy timing. But we know it's there. We know that there's a time and a place for everything you do on that stage.
Yeah, there absolutely is, and it needs to be tight so that people are laughing and not talking or not heckling or not doing anything. Now, I'll tell you I thought it was just strangest gigs that I was ever at that involved heckling was, I did this bowling alley gig in Anaheim. And there was this guy that would set up these bowling alley gigs. And, man, I was big on the bowling alley circuit there for a while. But they'd set them up in the lounge, and usually they were great gigs. And he set this one up. It was just starting out. So it was just a two-performer show, just like a feature act and a headliner. And so there was 10 people in the audience. They were kind of spread out, you know, 2 or 3 over here, 4 over here, you know, that kind of thing. There was no big audience at all. And the gal, she was supposed to do 20 minutes and I was supposed to do 45 minutes. That gives you a complete show, right? So she gets up and she starts her 20 minutes. She's doing pretty good, I thought, for this little crowd. I was like, yeah, she's doing pretty good. And this idiot from the bowling alley walks into the lounge. You know, he's got the whole uniform, you know, the matching ball cap and green shirt with the bowling shoes, blah, blah, blah. And I was sitting in the back, and he comes in. He's standing in the back. He watches the show for about 5 minutes, and he starts yelling, "You suck. Get off the stage. You're not funny. Bring somebody up that's funny. You suck. Get off the stage. You're funny." Well, apparently, I mean, he was relentless here. He just started out of nowhere. Well, apparently, the biggest man in the audience was kind of liking the show. He was really liking the show. So he got up, and he kept getting up and getting up. And, oh, my goodness, this guy's a monster. And he walks over to this little guy with his bowling hat and his bowling shirt. And he gets right up into his face, and he goes, "Hey, you need to shut up." And the guy looked at him and went, "No, I'm not going to shut up." Well, he only got that part out before he got whapped right in the head. And this guy started whapping on his head, had him by the shirt, was whapping on his head all the way out the door and into the bowling alley. The whatever people was in the show, it emptied out, and a melee started in the bowling alley. People just started beating one another. I don't know if it was a testosterone reaction or what happened, but this guy was hammering the one guy, and everybody went, "Yay, we got to do this too." And they just, and oh my goodness. And
the scene out of a bad movie.
Whoa, it was amazing. I was sitting there, and people were running out, yelling, screaming profanity at each other, running out. I'm just sitting there in the back. And the guy who was booking the gig comes up to me and goes, "Are you going to perform?" I said, "Well, not now, because there's nobody in here. They're all beating each other up out there." And that's exactly what happened. They were just beating each other up. The police came. I mean, I had to get interviewed by the police. Myself, and I didn't do anything. I was just sitting there going, "Okay, well, what happened?" I went, "Well, beating started happening. That's all I know. I'm just here to get up on stage."
Well, was there a theme? Was it like the bowlers against the...
I have no idea what it was. It looked like pretty much everybody in the bowling alley part was participating in this beating.
And this is Anaheim. You said Anaheim.
Yeah.
That's a pretty civil place. Wow.
Well, you'd think, but hey, but there you go. There's
All right. Well, I got to ask a question. You said you didn't, there was no audience, but it never happened, right? You did not get to perform. Right?
Actually, believe it or not, I did. I kind of just sat on the stage because there was only like 3 or 4 people there. And so I just kind of talked with them, you know, did a few things because the police were interviewing people in the back of the room. So there was only like 4 audience members. It was just a bust. But I went up there and just chit-chatted with the people and, you know, wasn't trying to do any, you know, yuck-yuck comedy stuff or anything like that. Just trying to be a real human, and it worked out okay.
You get paid? You get paid?
Oh, yeah, I always get paid, dude.
Okay.
You do everything. Now, I'll tell you another little, somewhat related heckler experience. There was a comedy club for a short period of time called Checkers, and it was down in the Gaslight District there in San Diego, pretty close to Dick's Last Resort.
Yeah, that's a good start right there.
Well, so here we are. We're in Checkers. I think I'm the feature act. Yeah, I'm pretty sure I'm the feature act. But the headliner that night was Wild Willie Parsons, and Wild Willie Parsons, he's the original biker comedian. Okay, if this gives you any hint. I mean, he's one of these monster people. Monster people. I mean, he's monster tall, monster wide. Wears the whole, you know, motorcycle club garb, the whole deal. You with me?
I'm with you. I can see him well.
So I'm doing the feature stuff, and this guy started, you know, and I kind of whacked him a little bit, you know, and he just shut up, and I just kept on with my stuff. It was nothing. There's nothing to write home about at all. And Wild Willie Parsons gets up, and this guy takes to heckling Willie Parsons. Okay? So, and you know.
Alcohol was involved.
Well, yeah, alcohol was definitely involved. So, Willie took care of him. He took care of him quite nicely. Okay? And so, I'm out in the lobby after he gets off stage, and I walk outside, and Wild Willie Parsons has got this guy up against the wall, and he's going, "Don't you ever, ever heckle me again. The guy said, I was just trying to help you. He goes, I don't need any help, and if you ever do that, I'll beat your head in. I mean, this guy's feet were not touching the ground.
Well, that's one way to get...
Man, let me tell you what, that I was like, yeah, baby! This is every comedian's dream, right here.
Wild Willie Parsons is now a bouncer at a comedy store, I take it.
No, he's a I've performing comedian that, as a matter of fact, he was in Guardians of the Galaxy just not too long ago. So, I mean, you know, these are some of the things that I've seen when it comes to heckling. Now, like I said, usually you can usually shut these people down so fast and it just doesn't take away from your act and you just deal with them, you're done, and then you can go on. But I'll tell you something that I've seen twice, I saw twice, and that was comedians that were so offensive that they walked the room, or not funny, and they walked the room. Here's the two times. This is when I started at the Improv. Fortunately, it wasn't during my show. It was some other show that I had access to, and this room was pretty full. I guess there had to be about 100 people in there, and he got up, and in 10 minutes, half the audience was gone. And he was doing some kind of Jesus and bestiality bit. Didn't go over well.
Yeah.
And they just got up. There was no heckling. There was no heckling. People just got up and left.
Was that offensive?
Oh, yeah. I just went, wow.
Now, in the back of the, on the way out, I mean, you say walk the room. They got up, walked out. There were folks, I'm assuming, if it was me, I'd be stopping at the door saying, I want my money back. That's not a, even if they didn't give it to me, I'd say,
oh, yeah, yeah. I mean, I don't know all of what happened. All I know
is. That's not good for the club. They're not,
No. But I think that this was a free show.
Oh.
This was not a paid show. This was a free show. So they just got up and left. And it was the most fascinating thing because, man, just this audience just went and they left. The only other time I saw that was I was a feature act at the Ventura Concert Theater, about 1,000-seater. They had about 600 people in the room, which is a great size audience for that theater. And they had an opening act. He did well. I got up. I nailed it. The guy comes up as the headliner, and I'm standing outside in the lobby, and people just start pouring out after about 5 minutes. I mean, pouring out. I mean, 600 people is a lot of people. Within 15 minutes, he had walked probably 400 of those people and shut his show down at 25 minutes.
Did you hear any of the material?
It was terrible. But see, I didn't watch it. The people who hired him watched it.
Yes.
And what had happened is he got hired on a tape that he had edited as a headliner. Yeah. Yeah, and they didn't catch it. You know, one of the things that agents and people who really know what they're doing always look for an unedited tape if they want longer time. They want to see a comedian's longer time recorded. They want to see it unedited. And many times they want to see it right from the beginning. They don't want to see it from the middle. They don't want to see it after you got started. They want to make sure that you can kill them right at the beginning and keep going. But man, he was up there and we were sitting up there waiting to get paid. He got paid. Now, he never worked for them again. But he stepped outside of his level, and it wasn't a very good level, and man, he just walked the room. So, there's other things that can happen besides heckling.
Yeah,
you know?
That's what I was gonna say. There's probably a lot of factors that affect the show, affect you and how you deliver your material.
Well, yeah. I mean, people can be talking during a show. It's just amazing how rude some people can be. I mean, they will sit there and do all kinds of things. I've had a lady make a call on her cell phone while in the front row while I was on stage doing a headliner bit. I'm like, and I stopped her, and it was her, at least she had the ringer off. So what happened is she got a call from her babysitter and she picked it up and she was talking just like I wasn't even there. And so I stopped the show and I went, who are you talking to? She said, my babysitter. I said, hand me the phone. And for the next 3 minutes, I chit-chatted with the babysitter. Now, I knew the audience could hear my half, so I kept the show going. And I said, okay, well, don't call back because I'm in the middle of the show and I don't want to have to send the police over there. you know, because they'll arrest you for this. I don't know if you know that or not. Anyway, so I handed the phone back to the lady, and I said, here, try to keep that to a minimum during my show if you could. What do you think, audience? Yeah, well, they just loved it. I mean, I didn't miss a lick. But that's one of the things that can happen. There was one of my favorite things about talking that ever happened. I was doing the Galaxy Concert Theater. That's in Santa Ana, and that's a 550-seater. And this place was packed. I mean, there were people up in the balcony. It was just packed. And so I'm doing my show, and I'm about maybe 12 to 15 minutes in, and these four gals are talking so loud at the table, I guess I'm interrupting them, because they just keep talking louder and louder and louder. And I finally stopped, and I looked over, and I said, what in the heck are you talking about over there? You're interrupting my show. And one of the guys from the balcony yelled out, they're blonde. And I looked up at him and I said, dude, don't even go there. I don't do any kind of material about handicapped people at all. And let me just tell you what, I shut him down, shut these four gals down, and continued on with the rest of my show and didn't have a lick of problems.
Now, they didn't leave, though. They realized that they needed to shut up,
basically. Yeah. I mean, it's just amazing. I there's all kinds of things that can happen during a show. I mean, you can have people that actually have medical emergencies.
Now, when you first started, medical emergency, just saying that, you know, because that's in the back of my head. One of your goals was to have somebody laugh so hard they ended up being taken out by an ambulance.
Yeah, that was kind of a silly goal. Man, but I tried to do that for a while.
You got pretty close. I think it was me. I was having a little bit of chest pain one time. But with that said, medical emergencies do occur.
They can. I mean, people can just have some kind of attack or something. I don't know exactly. I was very lucky. I didn't really have any of that kind of thing. I mean, I always had the... You know, if there's something was going to happen, it would be the server would, you know, drop a tray of glasses and they would all crash, you know, stuff like that. Didn't have too many people brandishing weapons or anything like that, you know.
Those fun clubs, huh?
Yeah, I mean, you know, and you can always have equipment issues where the mic goes out or the lights go out or... I mean, if you do this long enough, you're going to see all kinds of things that can potentially happen. I mean, I've known people that have been performing in the building, part of the building caught on fire.
Yeah.
And you know what? Good. That has a tendency to put a squish on a show.
Yeah, that would do it. Yeah, don't holler fire in a crowded theater routine, huh?
Well, I'm just going to tell you, I'll tell you something that I learned very early on, and this was at Camp Pendleton. And this was one of those gigs that I got as a result of winning that comedy competition. I was out there to be a performer in another comedy show that they had. And they wanted me to be the opening act. And then they had a feature act and a headliner. And I don't even remember who they were, but I went out there and they said, hey, do you want to use a wire mic or a cordless mic? And I said, well, let's do that cordless mic. That'd be great. Not having to fool with the cord. And, dude, I got out there and started talking on this thing, and it came out. I mean, through my – I mean, I only had to do 5 minutes, but it came out. Well, come to find out, when security would drive by and use their radios, it knocked out the wireless mic.
So were you picking up their sound or just the
– No, it would just knock the sound out. So I was just well, you can't get any laughs like that. You know,
if the audience
can't hear you, it's going, buh, 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 buh. Well, that doesn't create any laughter.
Especially right at the punchline.
Yeah, well, it didn't matter. They didn't know what the setup was. They couldn't tell.
They didn't get anything. They were on their own.
No. So, I mean, there's just all kinds of stuff that can happen. And by the way, I never used another cordless mic after that. I knew why. Unless you're in the high-end, super high-end stuff like the Academy Awards and that kind of stuff, man, you want a wire mic. Those don't go out. So
the wireless, though, they're very, very common now.
Yeah, they are common, but like I said, you got to make sure that those things work and work properly. And I wouldn't trust them unless it was some really expensive production and I was assured that I was, you know, it wasn't going to go out.
And you're right. I see that quite often. Now it kind of makes sense. You think the technology is caught up, but there's other technologies that get in the way.
Yeah. I mean, that's just, you know, that's just something. But, yeah, there's any number of things that can happen that can interfere with a gig. The important thing, the real important part that I want to bring to this is the tighter your act is and the bigger laughs and the more frequent laughs you get, the less heckling you're going to have. And I mean, through my 13 years actively performing, I'm just going to tell you, I didn't really experience very much heckling at all. People were too busy laughing. So that's a big deal, but you got to know what you're doing and you've got to have your act really tight. You just can't get up there and get, you know, generate two laughs a minute and not to expect to have somebody say something.
Well, and I think we're going back to that whole idea of preparing. You have to prepare. You said you stepped in and out of your act through heckling and through equipment issues and anything else you could step in and out of your act.
Sure.
And I think that's, you know, as you know, someone that gives lectures, I know that's really important, really important, that I can stay on task, because if I can't get it done, then of course it's held over to the next time. A little different than yours, but it's important that I stay on task. All right. Well, we have run out of time, but there's much more to come, so don't miss the next episode when we reveal more stand-up comedy secrets for beginners.